It's the very unregular adventures of a blue jay and a raccoon just trying to get along in the world. Who's paying for pizza tonight? We talk with J.G. Quintel about Regular Show on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast. Hey, I'm Dan Persons, and welcome to another special episode of MMP, brought to you courtesy of the Chronic Rift Network. So this time, we're talking with J.G. Quintel, creator of Regular Show, Cartoon Network's animated series about a young blue jay named Mordecai, voiced by Quintel himself, and his raccoon friend Rigby, voiced by William Salyers. They've got entry-level jobs at a local park. Their boss, Benson, is a walking gumball machine. His boss, Pops, is a giant lollipop. And their adventures start in such prosaic places as accidentally butt-dialing your girlfriend or wanting to get lunch at a highly publicized food truck and end up in such bizarre situations as getting sucked into the kingdom of voicemails or doing war with your cloned avatars. Modern life is hard. Oh, and one of their co-workers is a Yeti voiced by Mark Hamill. Yes, Mark Hamill. How about that? It's a fun show and an interesting counterpoint to Adventure Time, dealing with more contemporary situations, but similarly getting down to some honest human truths. So, here is my conversation with J.G. Quintel. We're focusing mostly on the just-released DVD from the show, called, with typical Regular Show humor, the best DVD in the world. And who are you to argue? The talk is good. Here it comes. Enjoy. Let me start off by asking you, you know, I don't watch a lot of Cartoon Network. I am sort of the belief that there isn't a lot of song licensing that gets done in general in cartoons. So I'm wondering how you managed to swing a budget for licensing music. Let me just say, you know, I watched some episodes outside of the disc set, you know, and I've heard Mississippi Queen, I've heard Hit Me With Your Best Shot in there, and I was wondering how you managed to wrangle that.
Well, what ended up happening at the beginning when we first started the show, we were putting together our animatics before we shipped to Korea to get it animated, and in the animatics, we liked putting in temp sound effects and temp music. And for the music, just to get the style of the show down, we were putting in kind of the stuff that we really liked, which was, you know, a lot of 80s music and a lot of rock. And when we played the animatics for the executives, they ended up saying, like, someone said, like, hey, these are actually really good with the songs. Like, should we try to get some of these? And I was like, yes. would you be willing to do that? Because I knew that it was probably going to be expensive. And then they said, well, we can try. And then we reached out and found out. And, you know, they gave us, you know, not a huge budget, but enough to, like, get a couple songs per season. And, you know, we try to pick ones where it's going to be a good chunk of the song and it's something that people will recognize and that really fits the episode. So we're not just, like, throwing it around willy-nilly. But we've got a couple songs I was really excited about. One you mentioned, Mississippi Queen. I mean, I was really excited to get that one and felt like the sequence that animated along with it was really awesome.
By the way, with Mississippi Queen, that one hung around a joke. So what was going to happen if you weren't able to license that?
Well, if we weren't able to license it, we figured, well, we'll have to change the name of it. Either that or maybe it would just be funny that the drink was called Mississippi Queen. Because in that episode, they end up like doing this kind of like hot sauce drinking competition. Mm-hmm. This guy makes the Mississippi Queen and it just ended up working out really well that we were able to get the song, and yeah.
So let me understand a few things about this. One of your main characters, Mordecai, the Blue Jay, was in art school, right?
Right.
You were in art school, weren't you?
I was.
Okay, and you voice Mordecai. Am I detecting a pattern here?
Yes, it's true. Mordecai is probably the most similar to myself, especially as a college student. He originally came from a short film that I did while I was going to CalArts, getting a degree in animation. And I voiced him at that time, too. And there were a couple other characters that ended up in regular show, like Benson was in that film. And then in my junior film called The Naive Man from Lollyland, Pops was in that film. And both of those characters were voiced by an animator that I was a friend of, who's one of my roommates, Sam Marin. And he ended up voicing multiple characters in regular show now. I mean, he's Benson, he is Pops, he's Muscle Man. And yeah, it's funny to see, like, moving from the student film where it's just, you know, rough pencil animation into a, like, fully finished cartoon, and it's still the same voices.
The thing that stands out about regular show is that at least the way the plots take off, there is a lot of drawing on things that may happen in real life or certainly attitudes that can happen when you're younger and entering the workforce. So how much does the show actually rely on personal experience?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, just recently, one of our episodes ended up winning an Emmy. It was called Excellent, and it was about Rigby just wanted to eat a 12-egg omelet to win a hat at a restaurant. But, you know, it's like a pretty impossible task, and Mordecai ends up trying to eat it for him. But that actually happened in San Diego. Like, we always go down for Comic-Con to San Diego, and there's a restaurant there that actually serves a 12-egg omelet to win, like, a shirt or something. And we were all there, and I was like, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to try it. Everybody's like, you shouldn't do that. Even the waitress was telling me, please don't do it. College kids come in, and they get sick. And I was like, I'm just going to try it. So I did, and the thing came out, and it was humongous. It was, like, bigger than a computer monitor. And it was like, oh, my God, there's no way I can eat this. And then just other things. I mean, like, you know, breaking something when you're a kid and trying to figure out how you're going to fix it so you won't get in trouble, and just the whole idea of not wanting to do your work and just do something that's going to be more fun. I feel like that's something that every kid goes through, and definitely every teenager, like the whole moment of like, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else. And, you know, growing up, I worked a bunch of like really lame jobs that I think ended up kind of inspiring regular show in different ways. Like, I worked at a theater for a while, and I can remember one moment where, you know, it was kind of closing time, but we were all just up on the roof of this movie theater firing water balloons off the top of the theater. It was like nighttime, and we're like, dude, we should totally try to hit that car. And then, like, we timed it just right, and we launched it, and right when we let go and the balloon was flying over the parking lot, the car pulled into a street light and we could see it, and it was a cop car, and we're like, oh, we all like dropped down. And I feel like that stuff all translates into regular show.
You know, on the production credits at the beginning, and this doesn't happen with every cartoon show, but there is a credit for the people who both write and board the show, doing both. And that is sort of unique. So what is the process with writing? Does the writing come first and the boarding follow, or and is it always understood that the person who writes gets to board?
Well, we are a storyboard-driven show, and so we do have a writer's room. We have writers, and me and my supervising producer and two supervising directors, like, we all have writers' meetings every day where we play games. And the way we generate ideas is we throw we write titles on pieces of paper, like just a title of an episode that you think would be cool that you'd want to watch if you heard the title. We throw them into a hat, and then we draw them out, and we spend 2 minutes on each one, writing as fast as you can, trying to get a whole episode out, right? And by the end of an hour, you have like 150 ideas. We read through all of them, and we pick maybe 3 or 4 that might be okay. The rest of them are garbage. And then those get written up into outlines, which is just like a simple beat sheet, just maybe like 2, 2.5 pages of prose writing. There's no dialogue. It's all just the beats of the story that need to be hit. And who's going to be there and where they are. But then when it goes to the storyboard artist, they actually write and draw the whole thing. So they're coming up with the dialogue, the specific dialogue. They have to stick to the structure of the story, which has already been figured out. But they're coming up with the details, and they're also deciding, like, how it's all going to look and all that kind of stuff. And then they pitch it to us, and we give notes, and there's lots of rewriting and trying to figure out how to make it better. And it's, like, a pretty big process. But I'd say, like, there are no scripts. I mean, by the time we record the dialogue with actors, it's being transcribed off of the storyboard, like a comic book. And that is being turned into a script for actors to read.
So you go real old school with this. It's drawing and then dialogue?
Well, it can be both. I mean, it really depends. As a board artist, usually you'll kind of imagine what they're saying in your head and you'll write it out. And then you'll start adding the drawings on top. And you just keep looking over it and reading it and thinking, you know, is this working? Like, you're trying to figure out where they're going to be. Like, you know, you'll start with an establishing shot of the house. Okay, I know they're at the house. And then you just keep working your way in and just drawing your way forward.
You know, there are moments in the show where you do push into surreal areas. The show in general has this very lovely 2D aesthetic, and then you go into something that's more extreme and more malleable. And when you're doing it as a student film or when you're doing it on your own, it's easy to transition from one style to another. When you're shipping it overseas, do you get any problems when they need to go into like with More Smarter, where the world becomes sort of a digitized framework type of thing? Are there problems when you ship that type of material out?
Well, you know, the studio we work with, Seyram, I've been working with them since Flapjack, which was the show I was on before Regular Show, and they're really great. I mean, we send them reference for everything. So they get the storyboard, and then on top of that, they also get painted background keys. So it's not, we don't do every single background. We'll do, like, you know, a key background for each scene, so they know, you know, what is the tone of this background going to look like, where is it, and then for those transitions, we will show all of that stuff, like, this is going to be this color, and these lines are going to glow on top, and these things that animate over the top, like, that's all colored, like, we show them what it looks like, so they have all the reference they need to put it together based off of the storyboard and to come up with new backgrounds based on different scenes. And sometimes there's, you know, hiccups. Like, sometimes Mordecai will come back with, like, a red beak, and we're like, oh, his beak is not red, but then they'll fix it. And, you know, it's just, it's all a part of the process where, like, you're going to catch the mistakes and you just keep going over it until you run out of time.
So, you know, as I mentioned, you are doing voices. A number of the other artists are doing voices on the show, which is nice. And then there's Mark Hamill, who does skips. And well, for one thing, I wanted to know, do you ever try to get him to do the Joker?
You know, sometimes, because we get him to do a lot of characters in the show, he's really versatile and he's able to kind of put on any voice that you could ask for. And sometimes you'll catch a hint of it in one of his, if we ever get him to do an evil laugh, but we don't ever ask him straight up just to do it.
It's kind of amazing that he has turned into this rather formidable voice actor, hasn't he?
He's so good. I mean, when we had him come to, because he sent in auditions, and he had auditioned for Pops originally, but I kind of felt like I wanted Pops to be voiced by Sam because he had done it in my films, and I kind of had my mindset on that. But when I knew that Mark Hamill, like, would do voices, I was like, oh, we must have something for him. So I asked him to try out for a couple other things, and when he did skips, I mean, it was perfect. It sounded just how the drawing looked, and I was like, oh, my God, that's it. Let's get him for skips. And so he did it, and then as the show went on, you know, when we have other characters that we need, he's just, it's really entertaining to watch, especially when he gets into parts of, like, talking to himself in different voices and you know, Sam does that a lot too, when he gets like a whole page where it's him, Pops, and Benson, and Muscle Man talking to each other. You're just watching him like talk to himself, and everybody's just like, wow, it's crazy. It's all coming out of the same guy.
So, you know, I'm not going to ask too much about, you know, how certain characters came about, because I'm not sure, you know, how much you can explain about how Mordecai becomes a Blue Jay, you know, and those sort of things. But I will ask about Benson, 'cause he's an ambulatory gumball machine and a high-strung ambulatory gumball machine. And I can sort of see that, because if you think about the life of a gumball machine, you know, it's full of a lot of stress. You're out on the sidewalk all the time. You're prone to kidnappings or somebody taking a baseball bat to you. So
unnecessary touching.
I was wondering, though, in particular, one of the episodes on this disc set, Think Positive, which you know, sort of raised the question whether you created the character, did you say to yourself, you know, we have to do something with the gumballs at some point?
You know, we did. I mean, because we typically don't call attention to the fact that they are, you know, Blue Jay, Gumball Machine, Lollipop. But with Benson, and it has happened several times with various, you know, ball-related jokes, and I mean, just with that one where he's getting like super angry, and we see the gumball swirl around. It was just like a really cool animation choice that made it look. I don't know. It felt really cool to kind of use them in that way in that moment, and yeah, he's a fun character because he's probably one of the only ones where we really call attention to what he is without, you know, going too over the top with it, but. He gives us some leeway for some of those jokes because he's a gumball machine.
And then I wanted to ask you about High Five Ghost, which is I suppose one of the characters that's supposed to go sort of under the radar, except that I keep obsessing over him. And I guess I like the idea that apparently he's the complete and total reduction of a concept. It's like the character in Back to the Future from Biff's gang. You know, it's like that guy who is just in the background with the 3D glasses.
I knew you were going to say that guy once you started talking about.
He is that guy, you know. But I'm thinking, you know, if Muscle Man needs somebody to high five, why not get a character that's just there for the high five?
Exactly. I mean, when I came up with him, because Muscle Man was going to be that kind of like prankster jerk character where he's always, you know, getting his my mom jokes wrong. But then I felt like he needed that like balance of like kind of the crony that even though everybody else sees him as this weird person and they don't quite get him, like someone has to get him. And I felt like High Five Ghost was like the quiet guy that was never going to say anything, you know, contrary to what Muscle Man was doing. He's always going to support him because he's one of his best friends, and he's perfect for it because Muscle Man's always looking for the high five.
So, you know, one other thing that I wanted to ask you about, you know, a lot of the plots of Regular Show really involve sort of timely type of events, timely type of issues, you know. And I'm wondering if you think about the longevity of the show, if you're concerned about the fact that, you know, stuff like butt dialing and rap war and things like that, whether those will carry forward, whether the show will have a life beyond the immediate time.
Well, we try really hard to make it timeless. I mean, even though we do have some things like cell phones and we talk a lot about, you know, technologies that are long since dead that I think only parents can really appreciate, like VHS tapes and cassette tapes, and which is all part of the 80s aesthetic that we really like to sneak in there all the time, or I guess not even really sneaking. But I think because most of our stories are coming from such like a emotional place, and we're trying to make it relatable that it's things that you go through, you know, in any situation. It's like you're worried about embarrassing yourself, or you're mad at somebody for messing something up. I mean, I think that those episodes, even with the like butt dialing the cell phone, it's like nobody wants to embarrass themselves in front of the girl they like. So I think that that in itself will kind of like keep it going, even if there ever comes a time where people don't know what a phone is.
That video game console, by the way, looks a lot like an Atari 2600.
Oh, we like, it's kind of like a hybrid of like every system from that age, like Sega Master System,
yeah,
Atari,
yeah.
Like the first kind of versions of those things to pop up that, you know, everybody has to be able to remember them. I mean, they were so fun.
And one final question, is there hell to pay around the studio if anybody ever calls it the regular show?
For the purists, and most of us on the show are, we do cringe when people add the in front of it. And that was something where, at the beginning, you know, I had called it regular show, and right away I started hearing that popping up, and I was like, oh, no, like, it's going to be that thing where, like, it's like going to be a common mistake, because so many shows are the, and then something, something, right? And so I'm glad that there are people out there that do recognize the difference and try to uphold the truth and just call it regular show.
I am pledged to your mission, okay?
Excellent, excellent.
Okay, thank you very much. JG, thank you for talking with us.
Thanks a lot.
So you can see Regular Show regularly on the Cartoon Network and via the best DVD in the world. That's the name of the disc, which is available now. And if you want to write me, please send that email to dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and have fun. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2012, Dan Persons, all rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.